Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are...
For Colored Nerds.
The conversations that black people have.
When white people are not in the room.
But we record them.
And we put them on the internet.
Yeah. How's it going?
You know me, tired as usual. How about you?
Yeah. You? I mean, usually... Usually you seem like you've had about like 6 cups of coffee.
I know, and I've had none.
Yeah, but like, yeah, man, this... Like, you know, I want to give you some of my energy. Like, damn.
I know. Actually, it's weird because it's true. On Saturdays, normally I come in here and I'm like, hey.
You're like, what's going on?
What's happening?
You know.
And you're like, well, not to me. But this morning, you were so chatty. And I was really like, I told you. You know what? The first movie that I ever saw that had the F word in it, I think it might have been Michael Douglas or, you know, some white guy. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was called Falling Down. And I remember I couldn't sleep one night. My parents were like, okay, well, you can sit and watch this movie. And I was just like, this dude kept being like, fuck this, fuck you, blah, blah, blah. This dude lost his fucking mind. He was walking around his his town with like a baseball bat, beating the shit out of people.
Yeah.
That's why I don't trust white men to this day. But, yeah, that's how I feel right now.
I was really excited to see where that was going to go. I was like, damn,
that's
I really have
I
no
right
clue. Where this story is going, but you know, yeah. I feel that it's like that sometimes.
Yeah, like I think that like Beyonce carrying like the little hot sauce baseball bat with her like yellow, I think it's like a Cavalli gown, like that's beautiful. Yeah. That's not how I feel.
Yeah,
that's like a like I'm a sexy jilted woman, like you know what I mean.
You're full on like machine gun.
Like I've lost my mind.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
But you know, other than that, I'm chilling. How are you doing again?
I'm doing all right. You know, stuff going on. It's always too much to do, but I feel good today. Mm-hmm. It's Peanut's first dentist appointment. Yeah.
Does she? Oh, she has a couple teeth.
No, she has like, she's got a good six-ish teeth.
I didn't realize, I had the same dentist from like birth through 26, honestly. I don't remember, like, what do you do when you're a baby?
At this age, you know, like, we brush her teeth, which involves just sticking a toothbrush
so
in our mouth.
I wish someone brushed my teeth.
Yeah, and she basically just sucks on a toothbrush. But at this age, just making sure, like, the teeth are not growing in, like, sideways, and that we haven't, like, they're not, like, a different color, you know?
Yeah, like, she's growing in black teeth.
Yeah, yeah, like, there is some, like, there's general health of the teeth. They're growing in healthy. She has healthy gums. Like, that's the important part.
Yeah.
And then later, you know, then it's like we introduce flossing. Like, right now, it's just like, I'm the dentist. I want to see you. I want to cash in on this insurance.
I want to
make sure you have teeth and that, you know, your parents aren't negligent.
Okay. So it's just like, it's like a, you know, like, what is it? It's a scam.
It's a scam.
Baby dentist is scammer.
Baby dentist is scammer. You know, I'm sure we'll get a couple letters about that. but yeah, that's all I got going on. Just living.
That's what's up. You know what I'm saying? So fall is here. Fall is my favorite season. And part of that is because my birthday is in it. And really the main reason.
That's what I'm saying. What's the other reason?
Because I actually am not that big on Thanksgiving. Like Thanksgiving to me is kind of like a
It's like a throwaway a, holiday.
Oh, yeah, to, I'm sorry.
It's a good meal. It's a
it
good
is
meal.
A good meal. But I mean, like, my thing is like Christmas to me way more popping.
Yeah.
And I eat essentially all the same foods that I have at Thanksgiving. I also have them again at Christmas. Mm. And Christmas, I additionally get presents.
Yeah.
Because we have no babies or children in my family at all. Everybody, everyone in my immediate family. And, like, well, none of us have any kids, so everybody's at least 25 years old.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't get presents.
My younger sister is 27. So, like, everybody's still like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I still get presents. It's not like we're buying up a whole bunch of toys for, you know, somebody who's going to forget about it anyway. But on some real shit, just my birthday is popping, and fall is when I know my birthday is coming. And it's, like, a good season, too, because it's, like, it's not so hot that your makeup is melting off or your hair is fucked. You can do whatever you want with your hair in the fall.
Yeah, sweater season. Yeah.
Sweater season is starting. Yeah, that's a cool fall look. I'm not sweating constantly. Mm. We're heavy sweaters, actually.
I'm ridiculously sweaty all the time.
Tea for Colors, yeah. Hashtag heavy sweaters. We go from heavy sweaters to heavy sweaters. Do you know what I'm saying? Heavy sweaters to heavy sweaters.
Yo, we're on fire today.
I know. Booyakasha. Anyway. But yeah, it's fall. I'm hype. And probably I'm going to use this show as a way to count down to my birthday. So.
Oh, well, it's good to know. Thanks for the heads up.
No problem. 25. Yeah. 2016.
So now that you know that we have absolutely nothing going on in our lives, we should talk to you about why we're here today. We are here today to talk about a movie that we both saw.
Yes.
It's not a new movie.
No.
But it's
I was about to say, it's not an old movie.
It's not an old movie, yeah. But this movie is The Fitz. It had a limited release, independent film.
Mm-hmm.
Released last year kind of on the festival circuit and had a like slightly larger release this year.
Yeah.
And it's now available to rent on whatever your chosen platform.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, whatever,
Google, exactly. Mm-hmm. So to break the movie down before we like get into it, the movie is about this 11-year-old tomboy, Tony, who slowly becomes, like, entranced with this black drill team. So she, like, pursues joining them, and she kind of, like, is struggling to fit in and find her own femininity. But then she starts noticing that the members of this dance troupe are kind of caught up in these, like, really seemingly, like, dangerous fainting and violent seizure-like fits.
Yeah.
And so she's trying to unlock kind of like what's happening with that and discover something about herself.
Yeah, actually, like Eric watched the movie last week and was just like, have you seen this? And I was like, oh, I heard about it. I haven't seen it yet. And he was like, you need to watch it. We're going to talk about it on Saturday. And you were like, and then you told me this on like Tuesday. And then like on Wednesday, you were like, you need to make sure that you watch the movie on Friday night. And I'm like, I know we record on Saturday morning. You're just like pressuring me. What made you be like, we have to talk about this?
Well, a lot of things. Like, the first thing I thought was it was a really beautiful film.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, it's kind of hard to get a film where black people are lit right.
Yeah. It's the truth. That is like, the damn truth.
And, the central character, the protagonist, is this dark-skinned little black girl.
Oh, my gosh. Played by Royalty Hightower. Best name of all time.
Yes. Fire name. Shouts out to her mom.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought that it was really well done. When the film was over, I felt like I wanted to know more about the characters and the world that they were in. Like, I was just like, I want to stay here. Like, I want to squeeze more out of this. I want to see more. I left the film definitely, like, excited about, like, all of the people who were in it and, like, excited about the world that I had been brought into.
Yeah, it's a really, really, like, to me, it was a really, really satisfying story that was just accentuated by, like, every single piece. Like I said, the photography was really good. The sound design was really, really great.
The choreography was excellent.
Yes.
Like, so like every character, with the exception of one person in the film, is black. And, like, black drill team is such a specific type of dancing. It's like some people call it drill team, some people call it majorette. I think anybody who's seen the formation video is familiar with what that type of dance is like. Mm-hmm. And if you're a black, the chances are really high that you know. Yeah. You can think of tons of other examples. For example, Howard University's Ooh La La dance team. You had that type of choreography, but then something that I could tell throughout the movie, I should say, so Tony starts off, like, obviously we're talking about movies, so like spoiler alert, whatever. But like throughout the film, you can tell, like I could tell that Tony was a really good dancer. Like that the girl, Royalty Hightower herself, even though Tony really? Started off, because like the ways in which she was a bad dancer, like I felt like the performance was so convincing, her being a bad dancer, that I was like, she has to be good. And, like, the other thing is that, like, so that was kind of, like, my guess. But then when I watched all of the girls have their fits, mm-hmm. I noticed that the fits seemed like rhythmic. Choreographed, yeah, rhythmic and like choreographed modern dance numbers. It reminded me of like, so I grew up around all white people, but my god sister Tichelle, she went to ML King High School, which was on the east side of Detroit. So I remember being really young and going to like my corny white dance school, Cheryl's School of Dance. Shout out Novi, Michigan. Shout out Elizabeth Berkeley of Saved by the Bell and Showgirls fame, who also attended Cheryl's School of Dance wow. with me. Right. Right. So like you can see what type of dance education yeah. that I was receiving growing up.
You probably got some tap.
Oh, I had some decent tap. I had a strong belly background. I will give them that. But I remember going to my cousin Tichelle's dance like recital for like King High School's dance program, and it was the first time I had seen like young black people doing modern dance, mm-hmm. and like that's what it reminded me of. I was just sort of like it was the first, like a lot of these young black women, if I had to guess, they probably had some type of like more, whether it's like majorette, drill team, cheerleading, or like popular like jazz, hip hop type mm-hmm. of dance background. Seeing them interpret the like the modern dance moves, which is a completely different like visual vocabulary, it reminded me, like that's what I thought of when I saw this scene in the fits. I was like, oh, this reminds me of Tichelle's dance recital from yeah. like King High School 1997. So I was like, okay, I could tell that the fits had been choreographed, and that's when I was like, this girl's probably a good dancer. And like, but like she looked believable as a terrible dancer that got better slowly over time, yeah. which to me made her performance all the more interesting. But the way that they used dance to like express certain things throughout the film and to sort of mark time and mark progress in the plot, I thought was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, interesting enough that you say that, I'm normally a terrible dancer. So I found her terrible dancing like totally believable to the point where I was like, damn, I feel for you, girl. Like, I don't know how it's going to get better. But it did. And yeah, clearly an excellent dancer. Yeah. And it was really fun seeing the team dance too, mm-hmm. just because like, you know, a few more years and I'd like to say removed from Howard. So, you know, I don't really get to see, like, we don't get to see that anymore.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
It's
we don't
nice.
Get to see the band or hear them on like Saturdays or yeah. Sundays or anything. But yeah, so it was really great seeing like that. In addition to just the performances were really good too. So yeah. we talked a lot. Like, there's not a ton of dialogue. It's not a very dialogue heavy film at all.
No.
But you got so much from all the characters in the film. Like,
yeah.
So there's Tony, there's her friend, I think like Beezy.
Beezy, yeah, she's so cute. Yeah.
Who's excellent in the film. And even yeah. her brother, Maine, I thought yeah. was really, really good. They did a great job of using like very small pieces effectively to like showcase like the depth of the relationships,
yeah.
you know, so you got to understand that, like, even though Tony is kind of a reserved girl, that she has an affinity for, like, she has a love for Beezy over time. She
yeah,
develops
yeah.
it. That's very clear and it's cute.
Yeah.
And even her brother, like her and her brother's relationship, like he's a very, like, it's clear he's a very focused guy.
Yeah.
But he's ultimately really like lovingly supportive.
Yeah.
Of his sister.
Yeah. Like he's like, I guess somewhere background, like he's like a boxer, and you can see that like this community center that they spend time with, that's where Tony starts off. She starts off in their world kind of training to be just like her brother. And then she's sort of like, you can tell she's like, what, maybe 11 or something like that, if
yeah,
I had to
like
guess.
10 or 11.
Yeah, 10 or 11. And she starts to notice, like, the drill team, the girls on the drill team, like, practicing. He notices that she's, like, kind of, like, on the outside looking in and kind of wants to join their world, at least see what it's like. And he actually is the person who gives her the push.
Yeah.
To, like, actually, like, move forward.
Which I found really endearing. You know, like, and I mean, I think this takes us to, like, another piece of what I found really interesting about the movie is, like, movies like this are typically in a category. And, you know, it's like fish out of water, a coming of age
yeah.
tale. And usually the older brother is this person who's like, oh, you want to dance now? And, you know,
yeah.
he's like poking fun at her
yeah.
or making her feel even more like an outsider. And that's just not really what happens in this movie on either side.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed how they flirted with like changing a lot of these like really cliched pieces of the category of the film that this could have fallen into.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
To kind of linger on that a little bit, this movie typically wouldn't be made in those categories.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
those coming of age, fish out of water tales are usually about little
white boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you have like Sandlot where, you know,
yeah.
boy moves to a new town.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he isn't quite sure like where he fits in, but
yeah.
he sees this group that he wants to participate in.
Yeah.
He's really bad. they like tease him a little bit, but ultimately he wins their trust and like blah,
yeah,
blah, blah,
and
blah,
it's
blah.
Like, I'm gonna get a lot of shit for this. If I never saw The Sandlot again in my life, I would be a fucking okay.
I mean, I do like it, but it
I like it. It's just like
flawed.
It's one of those. Well, it's not even just that. It's like once you've seen The Sandlot, you've seen every single goddamn little kids movie. All of them about the same thing.
Yeah.
White boy moves from a new town. Same
yeah.
shit.
Yeah, literally. Or, I mean, and there are a few, you know, where it is, like, where it's a white girl, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, she is kind of around the same age. Maybe usually a little bit older.
Yeah, yeah. People love stories about white girls cutting each other down in middle school. I swear yeah. to God. I swear to God.
And that actually brings to mind this really, really, really good article written by Morgan Jerkins, called Reading Bored White Girls, which we'll include in show notes. And everything we'll talk about, we will actually include in show notes this time, because there's a lot of good reading kind of around
yeah.
this movie. Reading Bored White Girls is this essay that kind of breaks down all those like typical white narratives of, you know, a young white girl in adolescence who has like a pretty regular life and like looks to complicate that through her actions.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's making like a really bad decision, or not necessarily a bad decision, but like trying to be different.
Yeah.
If you think about like Whip It. I don't know if you've seen that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, or she joins the roller derby. That movie is cute, actually.
It's a good movie.
She joins the roller derby. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, in terms of, but it's not necessarily a like a narratively. Like, it doesn't, like, subvert the narrative
no,
in this
and I mean,
crazy
and even
way.
That film is still, like, one of the best. Like, it's interesting. We talked about how most coming-of-age movies are about young white boys. It's funny because, like, when, like, stories, whether it's books, like what Morgan Jerkins is
yeah.
talking about in this essay, or films or whatever, like, most stories about even young white women are constricted. Obviously, stories about young black women are further constricted. But stories about young white women are constricted to sort of, like, they're usually... And so I feel like young white boys can seek out some sort of action, or they act
yeah.
to like join a new group or do whatever. I feel like young white girls' stories, like, or the bored white girls that, you know, that she's talking about in the essay, they're looking to just put themselves in a new context to be acted upon in a different way.
Yes.
To hopefully arrive at a different, like, oh, to arrive at a destination that they can't see coming. And for some reason, it must be so fun to be white, and just to like try to put yourself in danger.
To have, I mean, yeah, to have,
be like, I feel
have that option.
Safe. I just want to put myself in some danger. Like,
I have to wild out.
I'm always just like, how can I stay at home and be as safe as possible?
I gotta stay alive.
Like the $4 that my black ass has. But even there's like a lack of agency in these young white women stories that just like completely, like just like further complicates things and like leads to this bored white woman. I don't want to call it a trope. It's like a connected, it's like a theme.
There are pieces of that like narrative kind of in this, like we don't get a chance to see the complications that a young black girl would have in this film, you know, like her life seems fairly
yeah.
static, and
yeah.
it's clear she is longing for something, and it kind of positions the what she's longing for is kind of a deeper access to femininity and like some sort of sisterhood
yeah.
That she doesn't have access to.
Yeah.
And she kind of chooses this. But to me, I found it very different from this bored white girl narrative because of the fact that watching little black kids, I automatically, especially in this environment, they clearly are not necessarily like middle class. Like they're I fucking hate the word inner city. But
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like they're urban kids.
Yeah.
But you don't get a chance to see a lot of the like really heartbreaking.
The blight. You don't
yeah.
get a chance to see the blight.
Exactly. Like it's focused on her pursuing something pleasant. Or like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not about injury.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. It like it when you say injury, you're talking about Gia Tolentino on an episode of Long Form where she talks about
there's a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where she talks about this, she brings up this comparison of like a lot of times when you're talking about race, you're talking about injury or insult
yeah.
and opportunity.
Yes.
And it's like, and that's something that we've been using a lot in our conversations in real life, which sadly sound a lot like the ones that we have on this recording. But because we have nothing fucking going on. But yeah, it's like, you know, the story kind of chooses to focus on
opportunity.
It doesn't even seem like it chooses. It just seems like this is her world. She's a little girl. She wants to join this dance team. And, like, that's kind of what it's about, which is nice.
Yeah, I found it so refreshing. The other kind of piece of this, the way it kind of, like, subverts it, too, is the plot device of the film of her discovering this, or, like, or what complicates this opportunity of joining this dance troupe are these fits, you know? And that adds this very kind of spooky, unsettling, almost sci-fi-like element to it, which... How often do you fucking see in little black kid films? It's really, really rare and almost bizarre. Like, if for a second I was like, wait, I had to remind myself that I like this because it was just so new and, like, so different. I was like, wait, I for a second didn't know how to feel.
So much of being a woman is mystery and, like, you don't know. And even the things that we kind of know that, like... Like, all of, like, the blood and the guts and the piss and the shit and, like, the umbilical cords and, like, the menopause and, like, you know, all of that sort of shit. Whatever causes people to want to get their assholes bleached or, like, get vaginoplasty or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of the stuff that we know is still kind of shrouded in secrecy. And even, like, I don't know, like, how much did you know about childbirth before your wife had a kid?
Oh, absolutely nothing. I mean, I saw the clearest picture of what I had of childbirth was the montage scene of Mo Better Blues, where they actually show her giving birth. And, like, for the longest time, I always, like, winced. I was like, oh, my God, this is so graphic. But, like, at the end of the day, it's, like, it's one of the most natural part of, like, of, like, life. And some shit you got to deal with if you want to, you know, get married and have a kid.
Yeah. But, yeah, being a woman is, like, having – so much of being a woman is having a body that is mysterious and that in some ways feels out of your control. And then also being, like, when you're a woman, your body changes in this way that actually, like, affects your center of gravity in a lot of ways. Like, I remember being, I was such a small child. Like, I was the runtiest person in my immediate family, and I wasn't the youngest. And, like, I was such a small child that, like, I had to wear suspenders under all of my shirts to hold up my leggings, like my child leggings. I was that small. And, like, when I was, like, little, my parents took me to the doctor, and they're like, this child, like, our kid won't gain weight. We can, like, see her ribs. And they're just like, this is just how small she is. This is what's going to be. Literally, I never thought that I would ever be able to fill out a bra. Surprise. Puberty happened in this long, distended, just crazy long. It took me fucking, like, 10 years to go through puberty. I didn't finish until I was, like, 20. But, like, I literally have ended up with an adult body that is way different than, like, my body was even when I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, I mean, some people develop a lot sooner than that. But, like, I remember just, like, I also danced when I was younger. And, like, I got better. I remember, like, you know, I wasn't that good at it. And then you kind of get good enough at it in the body that you have when you're a kid. And then I remember being sort of out of whack and, like, not feeling like I was in control of my body. That's how I felt all the time. I think that's how all young people feel. You feel like your body is just, like, I can't control
you don't
my
know
limbs.
What to do with it.
Right. And so, like, trying to, like, dance and fit into this form and, like, be able to, like, be on a team and have to, like, look the same, like, have your movements be the same as so many other people's when you can't control your body is a weird feeling. But I also noticed that as I got older and older, I got better and better at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, still, like, my, like I said, I was like, maybe I got better and better at it about 16, 17. I did pom-pom when I was in high school, which is, it's like, okay, you have black drill team on one end of the spectrum, and then you have a pom-pom that I grew up doing with white girls. And then I coached also as an adult on the other end of the spectrum. But, like, it requires, like, a lot of the same insane practice, insane attention to your body, insane attention to, like, even though your body's doing all these crazy things, you still have to be in, like, you still have to be in step, in formation or whatever, which is, like, serious palm dance drill team word, with everybody else. And I don't know, it's weird. It's like you have, when you grow up dancing, you have a different relationship to your body in that you can feel.
There is some mystery, like it goes, like your understanding of it goes away.
Yeah, and even now I think about, like, the fact that, like, okay, I want to be a mom in a few years, let's say. What happens to your body when you're pregnant is positively alien. Like, it's on one hand the most natural thing in the world, but, like, you went through puberty and you are done. Like, you're
for the most part,
done.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, being, like, a cis woman who, like, you know, may one day, like, bear children. Or even if I don't, like, I will go through menopause. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, my body is still doing mysterious shit.
Yeah.
And so when I saw them going through all of these fits one by one, seemingly, like, kind of at random, but also kind of in a pattern, sort of the same way that, like, everyone gets boobs at, the same. It feels like all these different times, but it's when the same within the same 18 months, right? Or everyone gets their period, and you're like, oh, so and so got their period 7 months ago. I'm gonna kill myself. I haven't had my period yet. I'm like, it's like that's. I saw that, and I saw them having these fits, and I was like, yes, this is what it's like. You're getting to the. It's like the first time in your life where your body starts to do this really alien shit, and it never fucking ends.
That's really deep. I'm not used to these narratives, like these two, like this coming of age, but such an unsettling, like almost Stranger Things like tension, you know, like position with that. And I can see like a lot of what you were saying, like there are quite a few scenes of her like after she discovered this dance team, she's like touching her arms in a different way because they for a second they called her like muscles, not like teasing her. But she's like, oh, you know, I'm feeling my arms like to see how they're different.
Yeah.
And then like there was a scene of her like getting dressed and she wore all these like layers and it was clear because she didn't know how she felt about, I guess, you know, how her breasts were developing or whatever. It was clear at this point she was starting to take more control of discovering her own body in a way and that like spookiness was a part of that. That was interesting. I didn't know that that's what I was, you know, kind of like seeing at the time or witnessing.
But also the film is so sparse, like as far as, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I almost feel like you could like, I read this one, I think it might have been the piece that Soraya wrote, like Soraya McDonald, friend of the show, writer for The Undefeated. I want to say that she spoke to the director and, you know, one of the possible reasons why this is happening to these girls is that there's something that could be wrong with the water. Even though, like, the boys are drinking the water and the boys remain unaffected the entire film. So, it like, of course, you can't look at that in 2015, 2016 and not think Flint water crisis, right? And so the director, Anna Rose Homer, was saying that, like, you know, we made this film before any of the Flint water crisis. And, like, we made this before Formation. Like, this is, like, it's interesting to see, like, the different parallels that can come about just from, you know, people looking at this film through different lenses. And sort of like she's noticed that audience members are bringing their own, I think she used the word trauma, but audience members are bringing their own life experience and kind of like bringing it into the film and interpreting it that way, which I think is interesting. So like, I mean, that's how I saw it. But like, I could also see somebody else who has a different, you know, physiology, a different biology, different brain chemistry, is from a different country, could look at the film and see something completely different than I did or what you did.
No, definitely, definitely. And I mean, and it's interesting because I definitely took away, like, again, like back to that piece, like the parallels between this and Formation are like very clear and obvious. Like if you just seen the video once, you're like, oh,
yeah,
like, wow, okay. You know, but in addition to that, like there was also a piece of it that I found really interesting that like how centered everything was in her mind.
Uh-huh.
Like just like observing the world through a child's mind, like the things you hear and don't hear. Like she often heard like pieces of conversation come in and out.
Yeah.
And like there wasn't a lot of scoring because it, like so much of was from like Tony's perspective.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because a lot of that was like, was my understanding of, you know, of life as a kid because like I just didn't know what the fuck was going on at any given time. Like I'm just constantly trying to like use all these like pieces of this like really almost overwhelming world around me to like just understand like what is going on.
Yeah.
And it was like elements of that as well. Like the movie is so thin, feels like an insult, but it's like lean. It's like lean in a way that allows you, it's lean in time, like it's like an hour and 12 minutes, and it's so lean that you can add what you need to like get the experience that you want in a way that's really fulfilling.
Yeah.
So in coming back to the fits, mm-hmm. I think, and like what those are, and I think like we talked about them as like very rhythmic, dance-like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they're like rhythmic, dance-like seizures.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're, like you said, they happen in a pattern and without and at random.
Yeah.
Which is maybe because of Tony's perception.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also lean in the sense that you can ascribe a million different explanations for why, or maybe you can't,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, for why these fits are happening. Like that is something that is kind of seems intentionally ambiguous about the film. And, like, one, there's this one article in Vogue, which was an interview with the director, Anna Rose Homer, that kind of talked about it as like contagion, you know,
mm-hmm.
And not in the sense of like I mean, not only in the sense of like, this is like a, maybe like a disease or a sickness that's going around, but also like maybe like the contagion of emotions that I thought was really interesting, or like life experience. It was just interesting to see this thing, or see what it might feel like to see something happening to people you know or care about, and you can't understand it, but you, like, she almost develops a desire for it, you know, without like giving too much of the way, too much away for the film. That I found really interesting and unsettling too, how you can see something, be like terrified of it, of what that means, and then in addition, like want it in a way.
But that's also like, that's puberty, that's growing up. Like, you see like your peers, you see them like losing control of their bodies, but you also know in some way that like it's it feels like a mark of maturity. I think part of what drew Tony to the drill team in the first place is like this like confident femininity that she felt as like a little girl boxer she didn't have access to. So when she joins the team and they start having these fits, and I can also even see, like as a side note, I can also even see a case for someone looking at the film and being like, well, the fits didn't start until Tony sort of like
came into it.
Yeah, came into it, like left like the, you know, I guess as a blanket term, like the world of the masculine and like joined the world of the feminine. But yeah, like part of performing like femininity is like about like pain and trauma and like starting to wear an underwire bra and starting to like put cotton foreign objects in your body every month, like to collect blood. Like that's like so much of performing femininity is like pain and trauma that like become a part of like regular life. Even if like, you know, I think tampons are a great invention and I wear an underwire bra almost every single day. So it's not like I'm necessarily saying that those things are bad, but like, or that like they're so traumatic that I can't like live my life with like, you know, like using them. But there's a certain level of discomfort that like comes with like shirking away girlhood and growing into womanhood. You know, she found that appealing, I think, from afar. And then now that she's joined the team, the fits do kind of have an appeal in that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's that all is like, it's really interesting and foreign for me.
Why do you like, how did it make you feel like, I don't know, because Tony was such a strong character. Your sister's name is Tony also.
My sister's name is Tony, yeah.
And you have a niece. Well, you have several nieces now.
I have a bunch of nieces.
You have all the nieces. And you have a daughter. Yeah. How did it feel like watching, like, even having the conversation that we're having now and, like, watching the film and seeing, like, this peek into what girlhood is like or can feel like? How was that?
Well, I mean, honestly, it was kind of great. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, Carla and I watched the movie together. Mm-hmm. I could see a world where I show this to Eve, you know, and like have her watch it. And like at the point I was like, I don't know what I would say to her about this movie, you know, but I do think this is like, it's clear something about this is kind of important. You know, I recognize that without having the language for what it was. So I really liked it in that way. And I also like, I really appreciated it for that, but I also really appreciated it for the care that it took with like the importance of how they looked and how they sounded, you know, like when talking to each other. And like the lingering, you don't get lingering shots of a little black girl like dancing in a way that showcases its beauty that's not meant for her to pass it off to a white person.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's her teaching, let me show you how we dance. And, you know, like blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I like really enjoyed it for all those reasons. And I was like, I wish I had a lot more of the language. So I'm happy that we're having this conversation. I was like, I wish I had a lot more of the language for like what this is like on the other side to be able to pass it off to her. But I was like, I think, you know, she's going to have to be a lot older. But this is something like, this is a cool movie about a little black girl that's very different and not caught up in a lot of the, you know, the bullshit that is normally, you know, associated with little black girl movies.
Yeah.
Like, Beast of the Southern Wild, for example.
Yeah.
I was like, this is important. I'm excited about this. Like, I don't quite know why, and I know I need to challenge myself to like understand more. Uh-huh. But I was like, this is interesting for that reason. I think, and Carla and I, we didn't get a chance to talk that much about the movie, but I think she kind of had the same reaction. She was like, well, not necessarily the lack of understanding piece. I think she probably got some things
I think so too.
That I didn't.
Yeah.
But she was like, wow, okay. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was very much a filing of like, I want to keep this in my mental Rolodex.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be important later.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was at. Yeah.
That's interesting. It's just so, it's like one of the things I thought was, I haven't talked about this on this show, but I talked about it on an episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I talked about The Get Down and I talked about Stranger Things and sort of how, one of the things that's so cool about that type, about like media that's focused around young people is like when you see them sort of like flesh out like their inner worlds. And I felt like without having too much dialogue, I just found Tony to be so contemplative and to have so much going on. And like, I had never seen a movie that was so well wrestled with like a young girl's decision to move toward femininity. I think that a lot of the time in coming of age films about girls, because we live in a patriarchal society and a sexist and misogynistic society, there's an assumption that moving toward the feminine is to become unintelligent or to be underdeveloped or to start caring about things that are
trivial.
Yeah, trivial. Exactly the word I was looking for. And I liked the fact that Tony was given so much room to be a fully developed, like deep thinking, again, contemplative young woman who was making this conscious choice to move toward femininity. But femininity wasn't like, okay, you could tell that within their world, within the world of these young black kids, that the girls who were on the drill team were the prize.
They had stature.
They had stature. But additionally, once you got into their interior world of being on the team, they were very feminine and they were like really into the hair, the nails, the makeup. And you saw that like not just in their actions, but you saw that in their presentation.
Yeah.
You saw that in the way that they communicated with each other. And you also saw it in the choreography.
Yeah.
Like there were lots of hair flips and there's a lot of like kind of like kicky feminine attitude in the way that they move.
And it's important to note that those things are treated with reverence.
Yeah. Exactly. Those things are treated with reverence. And then also like, but like you also see like that at the end of the day, these girls are athletes and that they are like, you know, like they have all of these feminine qualities, but they practice really hard. They train. Do you know what I'm saying? They're all very dedicated the same way that the boys who were boxing down the hallway in the recreation center, they were also very dedicated too. And to me, it was like, I don't know if this was an intention, but I sort of took away from it like messing with the concept of what athleticism is. Like athleticism does not have to necessarily be masculine, and also that like moving from masculine to feminine is not necessarily devaluing yourself as a young girl. And like to see all of that happening like through Tony's eyes was very, 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 very interesting. And like I'm glad that it didn't end with like, you know, her. I can't remember precisely if I've seen a children's movie that has this exact plot point, but I'm sure there are some that people can, you know, maybe come up with the names. Maybe you guys tweet us shit. I don't know. But like there wasn't a scene where like she had her majorette outfit on and then decided to like box a match featherweight. You know what I'm saying?
There wasn't like she didn't have to run to like this box. Yeah, that she didn't have to run to the boxing match. And like the big thing was that like, oh no, I'm just gonna fight how I am because I can combine these two things.
Yeah, like I like that she was just like she wanted to move toward the world of young black womanhood. She wanted to move toward this super feminine like girl dominated space, and like she wasn't penalized for it.
Totally.
She found a lot of strength and like growth from it. I thought that was cool.
So actually, I think this is a good spot to take a break.
All right, we will be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, so you are back with For Color Nerds, and today we've been talking about the fits.
Yes. There's an important thing that I think we need to talk
about. Oh, I think we should definitely talk about it.
So, after I watched the movie, after Carl and I watched the movie, we were energized in a way, kind of feeling that same, like, wow, this is really, like, that was pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, like, talking about it. And so, my like, first move anytime I watch a new movie,
yeah.
usually I do it before. Like, I especially do it after.
Yeah.
Is I Google more information about the
Absolutely.
Movie. I want to see who directed it. I want to see who made this. And when I looked up Anna Rose Homer, who we've mentioned as a director, I was like, I'm not going to lie. Like, the steam kind of was let out of me because she's white. And now, my appreciation for the film was immediately complicated
mm-hmm.
by seeing that she was white. Because, I mean, just being perfectly honest, like, for how much I like the film, for how centered around black narratives and stories and relationships it was,
yeah.
I wished that it had been done by a black director.
So the actual production team behind the film, it was Anna Rose Homer, a white woman who's the director, and then two producers. One, Sayula Davis, who's a black woman, and another, Lisa, I could be butchering her name, but it looks like Lisa Karolf. And I think, I don't want to assume, but she appears to also be likely a woman of color as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a, what do they call it, multi-culti team.
Yeah, or it's kind of put multiracial.
We're not doing that today.
But I saw that and I was still kind of like, it left me wrestling with a lot of things. Like, there's this constant battle between how we tell black stories and who gets to tell black stories. And that's something that has been going on since black stories have been told.
Yeah.
And this is a case where I felt like this was a movie that was executed well and I could get behind.
Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely movies kind of like that. Like, last episode we talked about Dreamgirls. Fucking love Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
Directed by Bill Condon.
It turned out great.
So, yeah, it was an excellent movie. Mind you, I will note in the awards episode, Bill Condon directed Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
I will note that Dreamgirls has a lot of, like, texture that can't be necessarily, is really tough to remove its blackness, you
true,
know?
True.
And maybe, like, helps. But he did a great job in showcasing that film. Mm-hmm. Life is another one.
I've never seen that movie, but I know what you're talking about. With Martin Lawrence and...
Yep. Eddie Murphy.
Is
another movie directed by Ted Demme. Is another excellent movie. Definitely a black story, you know, done very well. But, like, I've been kind of struggling with that a little bit. Not because I couldn't identify, you know, any deficiencies as a result in the telling of the story.
Yeah.
But something about that left me feeling off, and I haven't necessarily seen it addressed in how she's talked about the movie in the interviews that we've mentioned, like The Undefeated and On Vogue.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Well, okay. See, I ultimately, and I told you this, I liked the movie. I think the movie was really well done. But, like, being a young black girl on some sort of dance team is, like, that's, like, first-hand experience. Like, I've had years. And so, like, I saw it and I felt like the story was very well done, but there were some things that were missing. There was a level of intimacy for me that was missing. Like, some of their conversations back and forth. So much of being on a dance team also... So I grew up doing a lot of competitive dance or whatever with a lot of young white girls. And there's, like, a shame that you have about, like, everyone's hair is supposed to be the same whenever you're competing or anything like that. And there's a shame that you can have as like, the only or one of a few black girls. As I got older, there grew to be more and more. As far as, like, quote-unquote, what to do with the hair and what to do with this and what to do with that. And when I coached as an adult, that was something that I really wanted to make all the little black girls feel comfortable about. But, like, I noticed that, like, whenever I would go to competitions or I would see, like, play cousins of mine or whatever, at whatever, like different dance, I guess, like conventions or things like that, or I would maybe go by their studio. Like, there's an intimacy that exists in those spaces from everybody being Black that was just kind of missing. And it comes in like the littlest places. Like, this is an outside example, but I don't know if you've ever seen the Beyonce documentary that she did for HBO. There's this one point in the documentary where it's like the first time that she's showing you like her childbirth process, right? Like, this is all never before seen stuff. And one of the things that I found to be so beautifully intimate about it had to do with physical presentation and hair. So when Beyonce was giving birth, she's in this huge fucking hospital room. So like 8 of her fucking family members are in there, but she's in these big rollers. Because she knows she's going to get sweaty and her hair is going to get jacked up. And she also knows she needs to take a photo with that baby so that she can send out to her fans. Everyone knows she's okay. The baby's healthy. Everybody's happy. But you see her give birth in these rollers. Her body cools down. And then you see her mother, Tina Knowles, lovingly take out the rollers and fix her hair so she can take this photo. There's a lot of little intimacies like that that happen on a regular basis in these like all Black girl spaces that I felt like on a certain level were just a little bit missing. So I didn't think that it made the film necessarily bad, but certain parts of that experience to me felt slightly sterile, if that makes sense. So like, I thought that she did a really good job. I thought that it, like, to me, I think it's a really well done film, but like there, I think that it is inevitable that there were going to be some things missing. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's like I could have a degree in, you know, Asian studies and I could have lived in, you know, Tokyo for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I could make a film about Japanese women and I could still miss a lot of their like their intimate lives that happen when they're interacting with just each other. Cause even like just being an outsider in like an all, let's say me being an outsider in an all Japanese space, it changes the chemistry.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Her being a white outsider in an all Black space, it changes the chemistry. When you're a Black woman in an all Black female environment, everybody's trying to keep that hair wrapped as often, as long as they possibly can.
A lot of bonnets.
It's like, exactly. It's like, oh, I don't have to. Okay, right. So, like, I'm going to try and preserve this for the outside world. I'm going to try and preserve this for the performance, right?
Mm.
I didn't feel like there was a lot of performance happening in between the girls in the film.
Yeah.
But the lack of some of those markers of intimacy, to me, still felt like it doesn't ultimately take away from, like, the overall quality of the film.
Totally.
But you just know that when you have a Black director, those touches are just going to be there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I totally do. And I felt like in some cases... that was intentional. Because, like, as we mentioned, the film is intentionally, like, sparse. Like, in a real-world scenario, there would be much more dialogue in a kids' movie. You know,
yeah,
like this.
Yeah.
You know, like, things like that. There might have been more opportunity for things like that. But that said, it might have been intentional.
Oh, because she's so isolated.
For a reason, yeah. But for the most part, I agree kind of with what you're saying.
Yeah, even if you don't agree with it in this instance, you can think of other instances where, like...
Definitely.
Yeah, where like that's the kind of the case.
Exactly. Where it's obviously easier, especially in this context with what the film is about, for you to identify those things than for me to identify.
There are probably a ton of Black women who could watch this film who haven't had the same exact, like, you know, dance background that I have had.
Sure.
Who would be like, I don't notice anything that's missing.
Yeah.
But like overall, like I said, I think she did a great job. And trust me, there are like some... Like, I remember, what's that movie, Girlhood, that came out a couple years ago?
Yeah.
I remember, I didn't see it, but it's a movie.
I still haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's a French film about 4 young, dark-skinned Black teenage girls living in France in the projects. And it was directed by Celine Sciamma, who is a white European woman. And the film was lauded, and I read reviews of, like, non-Black female critics and also Black female critics alike. And people were able to concede this movie is very well done. And, you know, like the fact that even that there are 4 dark-skinned Black teenage girls as the central focus of the film, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of the reviews that I read by Black female critics were like, there's still some intimacy that isn't yours that you wouldn't know is missing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you put the criticism of the film even lightly. There was a lot of like...
people pissed off?
Yeah, like people like legit fucking mad at the way those relationships kind of were executed because they felt like disingenuous.
Yeah.
I don't think this movie suffers in the exact same way.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's actually the reason why I didn't see it ultimately, just because it was, like, it was one of those things, like, I knew I wouldn't be able to identify those things because that's, like, nowhere near who I am.
You're not a young black French teenage woman?
Exactly. And, you know, I kind of was like, I had read so much of both sides of the criticism, I was like, I don't want to be picking sides in this, you know, in this thing. I'm like, movie's not necessarily one I have to see.
Yeah.
But there's another reason why, like, her kind of being white was complicated for me, in terms of, like, complicated my enjoyment or my reaction to the film,
mm-hmm.
was in terms of, like, how black stories get greenlit. And how, you know, black stories get the go-ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was, you know, to my understanding, from what I've read, and I think it's covered in maybe the Vogue or the Undefeated piece, I'm not sure. But she wrote the treatment for this movie in school and pitched it with the production team, the mm-hmm. the other two women who we mentioned, and eventually got the relatively small, I think it was like $100,000, that was needed to make it. And so that's a pretty scrappy process in terms of, like, how much funding you get and what you're what they were able to accomplish with that. But, I mean, the reality is, for the most part, maybe not now, like, today, you know.
Yeah.
It has traditionally been easier for a white person to stand up and say, hey, this story of color is interesting.
Yeah.
And should be told. Than it is for a black filmmaker to do that exact same thing.
Yeah. Well, because the assumption is that, like, it's like, if it's not... I remember being in film school and thinking about, like, what I wanted to make after I got out of college. By the time I graduated, it was fucking nothing. Fuck all of you. You made my experience here fucking terrible. But one of the things I used to talk about is I was just like, you know what I want to do? I just want to make a show about black people. And, like, it doesn't have to be, like... Whereas I remember, like, and I was just like, you know what? And it's going to make a ton of fucking money because even if it's not new to me, it's new to white people. Anything that's new to white people is what makes fucking money. So there's, like, some novelty in that, right?
Sure.
If it's novel to a white person, then it's new. If it's interesting to a white person, then it's interesting. But there's also, like, legitimacy wrapped up in that. Sort mm-hmm. of just, like, you need to have, I hate to draw this comparison, but, like, think about slave narratives. Every single slave narrative back in the day, you had to have a white person write the prologue because the thought that a black person could have something to say of value and would know how to put those thoughts together in, like, a reasonable way was so, it was like, I had a professor in college who said, like, you have to understand, two white people who could, like, read books, let alone the ones that could own land, just white people in general, this is like a cow speaking English. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Just like a cow being able to be like, all right, I'm going to tell you what it's like to be me. We're going to write a book about it. It's going to be great. So they had to have a white person write the prologue to slave narratives so that white people know, like, I am a white person. This is worth your time. And yes, this Negro did write this story. And, like, I'm not saying that this is what Anna Rose Holmer or Ted Demme or Steven Spielberg or any of them. I'm not saying that that's precisely how they're coming about it.
Yeah.
But, like, the need for white validity to have our stories be interesting and to have our stories move forward toward a larger audience has always been present. Literally, since we were writing about slavery, which everybody knew, like, everybody knew it was terrible. Everybody knew we were there. Like,
it was clear.
Yeah, it was clear. But there's still this idea that, like a black person being interested in telling a story that's local to them is not enough of a good reason to, like, follow through and fund something or to, like, amplify a message.
And so, I mean, I completely fucking agree. But it's interesting, like, looking at another movie, I think there was kind of an interesting comparison to make here with South Side With You, which was directed by Richard Tanney. That's his name. Who is also white and also a story about two black people, very black story, literally, like, about the Obamas,
like,
about
first
their
date.
First date. he talks, so there's this interview on Jezebel done by Rich Jezwiak, and he asks him, he's like, yo, you're white.
White person.
Yeah.
Jezwiak, just so you guys know, is, like, that is a white person's last name more often than not in the United States of America.
Yes.
Yes. So white person asked another white person.
Yeah. He was like, yo, so you're white. What's up with that? You know, what like, what justification do you have to make you the person that needs to tell this story? Because he also, in this particular case, he was I think, largely the central writer as well.
Yeah.
And how do people react to that? That was kind of the question. And interestingly enough, the director, he was like, I actually had kind of a hard time trying to get this film made. Yeah. I mean, you know. There might be some
in ways.
Yeah.
In ways. Not always. Yeah, there's
maybe some quotations around that. But he said people wanted the film, you know, obviously it's the Obamas, it's their first date, but they did not want it with him.
Yeah.
And I think that even that reaction is something that could probably only happen like the past 2 years,
yeah.
The past like fucking year and a
yeah.
half. That was like, I remember I was reading this in the interview and being like, my mind was fucking blown.
Yeah. Like, people were like, not with you.
Yeah, exactly. So literally how he got the film made was, you know, it was the casting of Tika Sumpter, which I also thought was really, really fascinating because of who Tika Sumpter is. I mean, beautiful woman. Don't even twist it. And also, like, finally, like, a black actress who's been kind of working to come up for a while now, finally, like, just really getting her due,
uh-huh,
I think.
Uh-huh.
But once he casted her as Michelle Obama, that's when interest picked up in the movie. And it's interesting to me for, like a kind of a million reasons. One, hearing that, like, a dark-skinned black actress who is kind of on the cusp but not, like, there. She's not Zoe Saldana.
She ain't Kerry Washington.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
she's, you know, like, she's trying to get, like, deeper into the mix.
Exactly. So to hear that, like, that's the thing that greenlit it was, like, I was like, wow, you know, maybe there's an inkling of progress and hope in the world. You know, also because of the fact that, like, she's kind of, like, I mean, and this plays into a lot of the, like, bullshit colorism of face. But, like, she's darker than Michelle Obama in skin. And, like, usually, like, look at fucking Nina. You know what I'm saying? Like, usually it's the complete opposite of that spectrum. So I think it's important to note, like, this is, like, her being in that position of power. I don't think, and he even acknowledged, he was like, I don't know that this is a sea change at all. I don't know that there's enough here to like be like, this is the fork in the road and we're finally moving in the right direction. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, that who she is helped get this movie greenlit and made. That felt like subverting the narrative, especially the one that you just outlined. So I think we're in like a world now where there's so much attention with Oscar So White, like, diversity hashtag trend of the past couple years, that a black person who's not Will Smith,
not Denzel, not Halle Berry, which is
she's not there anymore.
No, she's not in the mix anymore.
Zoe Saldana is kind of her replacement.
Confounding.
But, like, you know, is getting a movie greenlit. And mind you, this isn't a studio. This isn't a big studio film. This is an independent film.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm hoping this is a change that can continue, but also with black people at the helm.
Yeah. Like, I'm hoping that because the progress is hitting the white people first, I'm like, all right, maybe in 5 years, maybe 5 to 10 years, that we can finally, like, get, like, a Tika Sumpter-led, like, black romantic drama or comedy that, like, is directed by, like, a black woman, and, like, have that be like a hot ticket. That would be cool.
Maybe it could happen.
I know. I'll probably be a grandmother by then, but, you know, my fingers are crossed.
So, I mean, I think this is a good point probably to wrap up. So, I mean, if you take nothing away from this conversation, I do think it's important you should see this movie. Like,
I would say definitely see it.
Yeah, and it's available to rent on Amazon or iTunes, again, like, whatever you choose. But see it and tell us what you think. You know, like, we love to hear more about, like, other people's reactions because, again, this movie is kind of lean in a pretty, like, unique way. And you can ascribe a lot of different feelings and emotions to
it. You can. And it's, like, about a very specific... It's not about, like, this is all black girls' experiences. It's, like, about this very specific girl in this very specific setting. And I think because the world is so small, but the themes are so big, I'm, like, I think that anybody could have something interesting to say about this. So I hope y'all watch. It's a $4 rental. Maybe $5 if you get an HD.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if you're trying to stay up at the club, if you're trying to save some money, if you're on a budget, I mean, I would definitely suggest firing up the old Amazon.
Yeah. It's a good night. So tell us what you think on Twitter. You can email us at forcolornerds@gmail.com.
Yeah.
On Twitter, obviously, we're at forcolornerds.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other things that you could do, you know?
Yeah. If you enjoyed this and you want to see it continue, you could please rate and review the show on iTunes. You do not rate and review the show by emailing us. You do not rate and review the show by telling your mom. You go to iTunes, not SoundCloud, not Stitcher, iTunes for the rate and review. You can listen.
You
on
listen
other
wherever you feel.
Wherever you feel like you want to listen, you can listen. But if you want to rate and review, go to iTunes, 5 stars only, and write a nice little review.
Yeah. It really, 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 really helps people find the show.
Yeah.
In a way that we really appreciate. Another thing that you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to describe more important or less important, but it's important, is give to us on Patreon.
Yes.
As we mentioned, we want to grow the show.
Yes.
You might not think it, but the show could be better. The show could be better. We know that. We want to do that. And, you know, we honestly, we need your help to do that. So, you know, there's some things that we are trying to put in place that sadly we just need, some more funds to be able to accomplish that.
Yeah.
But if you give to us on Patreon, you will help the show grow. In addition to that,
mm-hmm.
you'll also very soon, you know, be getting some exclusive content from us that you can't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. In addition, this mysterious, legendary For Colored Nerds merch that will be dropping. I promise. It's actually not my fault.
It is. I was just about to say, it's not Eric's fault. There have been some technical issues that have nothing to do with us that are at play.
Yes. But you get discounts on that, and we're also going to probably do some raffles and things like that.
Yeah.
But only for our supporters on Patreon.
Anything literally a dollar or up, you can give as little as a dollar if you want to. $1, what you will get from us is our love and appreciation.
Yes.
But if you donate as little as $5 a month, that is literally $60 per year, you get 15% off our upcoming For Colored Nerds merchandise.
Yes.
So, like, you know, $1 will help. Literally $12 over the course of the year will help. If you absolutely have no money, just tell everybody that you know that we're on Patreon.
Yeah. Spread the word.
Spread the word, please.
Thanks for rocking with us. We will be back very soon.
Yeah, at some point.
Brittany is a ray of sunshine today, y'all. But yeah, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.